This is Mireya Loza. It is the 10th of January, 2008. I'm in Avondale, Arizona. I mean, yes, Avondale, Arizona, with Belen Soto Moreno. This is part of two interviews with this family. Another interview exists with Carmen Cordova. Belen, can you tell me a little about when you were born and where?
I was born May 29, 1935, in a small place called Salsipuedes, which was part of the Marinette Ranch that was owned by the Southwest Cotton Company. My parents were Ramon and Magdalena Soto. My coming into this world was a little bit different because my mother had been seeing a doctor in Glendale, and before she gave birth, the doctor moved away. So the only person that was available to deliver me was a horse doctor, a veterinarian. So that's how I came into this world. My father worked for the Southwest Cotton Company, and when I was 9 months old, he was hired to work as a supervisor on the west side of the ranch that was located in Litchfield. And I remember very little, of course, of that time. I do know from my father telling me stories that when he started working as an irrigator supervisor, he was on horseback. He would be supervising on horseback. Later on, as time changed, the company gave him a truck, and he would always have a red Dodge truck to go around and supervise the people living there. We lived in Camp 54, and our house was located on the northwest corner of the camp, and it was right across from the irrigation pump and the tank that provided water for the camp. As I recall at that time, and as I grew older, we were the only ones in the camp who had a toilet and a bathtub with running water. All the other families had to go do their business on toilets that were located outside the homes, where the rows of homes were. Every so often, there would be an outhouse.
How many brothers and sisters did you have? Was it really big?
I'm the oldest, and then I had three brothers and two sisters. My brothers' names are Ramon, George, and Jose Luis. Jose Luis is the youngest. And my sisters are Carmen and Manuelita, although we always called her Moni. And she got the name Moni because my brother, George, who was older than her, could not say hermana or hermanita. So he started saying Mani. And to this day, we all call her Mani.
And was there a school in the camp, or did you guys go to school outside of the camp?
No, we had to go to school in Litchfield, Litchfield Elementary School. We would ride the bus. We would all gather under a tamarisk tree and wait for the bus, and the bus would take us into Litchfield. When I entered school in 1941, I was not knowledgeable in speaking English. All I knew was yes and no, which came very easy. My mother did not speak English. My father did. So those of us that lived in the camps that didn't know English had to go into a special class. There was no kindergarten at the time. It wasn't required. But what we did, for us, we were placed in a classroom that was called an Americanization class, where we were supposed to learn English. We called it baby class because, you know, it was for babies, we thought. When you learned English, then you were passed on to first grade. There were some kids that didn't learn English right away, so they spent a lot of time in that class. Mm-hmm. It was the same year, in 1941, that my husband, Rudy, also started baby class. And we met in baby class, and I remember seeing him. We were lined up to drink water from a fountain, and I remember seeing him and thinking, oh, isn't he good looking? Little did I know that at that time that we would become friends throughout our, you know, our elementary school years. And we didn't date or anything. My parents didn't allow that. But when I was a freshman, I attended a winter fantasy prom. Mm-hmm. I invited Rudy to take me. Of course, my parents were very strict, and they didn't allow me to date, as I said before. So when it came time to go to the dance, my father went and took me to the high school, and he left me there, and I met Rudy. I don't remember how Rudy got there, but we were at the dance, had a pretty good time, and when it came time to go home, there was my dad waiting for me to take me home.
When you were young, at what age did you start working?
What age did I start working?
Mm-hmm. Or did you have home responsibilities that
work at home was helping my mother raise my brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. And I would help her mainly taking care of the bedrooms, kind of cleaning up the living room, help very little in the kitchen other than washing dishes in the beginning. And I used to get really upset with my brother George. I'd come home from school and make sure that I did everything that I was supposed to do, and then he'd be outside playing, and for some reason or other, he'd get mad, and he'd come in into the living room, and he would pull off whatever was over the sofa, and he would go into the bedrooms and pull the stuff off the bedroom, so I would have to do it all over again. Yeah.
When was the first time, or how old were you when you first recall hearing something, anything about braceros?
You know, I think I must have been in my later years in grammar school. I knew that they were living there. There was this huge cuadra made of adobe. Mm-hmm. And they were housed there. And I believe by the time they came, they also made some showers so they could take showers. Mm-hmm. And there was a large shed, kind of like a restaurant type thing, mm-hmm. where they could cook or meet with each other. Mm-hmm. I don't remember their names, but I remember that my mother used to cook, and some of them would come and have, not breakfast, never breakfast, but lunch or dinner, mm-hmm. there at our house. My dad was the irrigation foreman, and kind of became friends with the family. I know my sister used to play baseball with them, but I guess I was in the house most of the time. Mm-hmm. And I really don't remember them. I remember they were there, mm-hmm. and I remember that my father would take them to work and bring them back. Mm-hmm. I've been talking to some people, and I always thought that the Braceros were just living in our camp. Mm-hmm. But I've talked to some people lately, and I've asked them if they remember anything about the Braceros. One girl, Teresa Candelaria, who lived in Camp 50, said that, yes, she remembered the Braceros, that they did have Braceros in Camp 50. And he says, in fact, my mother helped to take care of them. And I think what she meant was by providing dinner for them, food. And I imagine that some of them also kind of helped with their laundry. Mm-hmm. Then I talked to Raul Moreno. Mm-hmm. And he tells me, yes, there were braceros in Camp 53. In Camp 53, they were housed in smaller wooden houses, which he believes that they shared, maybe two living in each house, two or three. He doesn't remember how many were there. He does remember that some of them used to buy tortillas from his mother. Mm-hmm. Every week they would buy tortillas. And the family also had two milk cows. And some of the braceros would also buy fresh milk from them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In Camp 52, where my husband lived, all that he remembers, and another friend, Marianne Soto Ekstrom, all that they can remember is that there was a big house that was built there at the camp, and that the braceros were living there. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so, from your experience with them, do you recall anything that changed for your family when they came for dinner? Did your mom have to cook more? Did you have to do more work duties?
I'm sure that she had to cook a little bit more than she would for us. Mm-hmm. And I remember that when they came, they were always the first ones to eat.
Why?
I don't know. Usually my father would sit down and eat with them, but the rest of the family ate later. Mm-hmm. And my mother was always overseeing everything, and she was always the one that ate last. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I remember happening is they would share the types of foods or recipes that they liked with her. Mm-hmm. And, of course, my mother made tamales. Everybody made tamales then. The wives, I guess through the mail, would send recipes of tamales made with different ingredients. Like sweet tamales, tamales made with bananas, made with other fruit. Mm-hmm. And they would share those recipes.
Mm-hmm. And when the braceros would send them, would they send them back home, the recipes?
I would imagine they did. Mm-hmm. They did, you know. We were the only ones for the longest time. We were the only ones that had a telephone. And after my sister Carmen was born, our house was separated. We had the kitchen, and then there was a dirt floor, and then there was the area that was used for the living room and bedrooms, mostly bedrooms. But after Carmen was born, they boarded up the sides, and they made a room in the center. It became another room, and that's where the telephone was. And I remember that my dad would always leave the door unlocked. You know, he would close the bedroom area. He would lock that, but he'd leave that area open because he said, you never knew when somebody might want to use a telephone at night. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
And he thought that maybe the braceros would have an emergency?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do you ever remember socializing with braceros in your youth?
I don't remember that. I remember dances. I remember a lot of dances before the braceros came. Mm-hmm. We would dance. I was even younger. Maybe I didn't even dance. There would clear the road, water it down, clear it down, and then they would have somebody play. Usually it was my dad and his brothers. Sometimes there were other people playing. I remember very clearly Jose Robles, who was a young man. He would play a bass fiddle that he made out of a tina, mm-hmm. you know, turned upside down. Mm-hmm. And they would have a broomstick and then some kind of rubber band. And he would play the bass fiddle while, you know, the others played the guitars and violins and all that. Mm-hmm. It was fun. When I recall most of those dances was before, at about the time that World War II started. I remember there would always be a dance to celebrate when one of the young men came home. There would also be a farewell dance when somebody had to leave, you know.
So if the braceros were coming in, you guys had a lot of your own youth going out to
work. Yeah. And then when the war was over, people started to leave the camp. They moved out. I don't know, but I have an idea that these young men saw a different world out there, and they wanted something of their own, wanted their own home. And so they slowly started to leave. And the music kind of, you might say, the dances kind of stopped. Many of the families moved out here to Avondale, here on Southern Lane in Avondale. Mm-hmm. It's called the shortest street in Avondale. The Moreno family, the Vicerra family, bought land, built their own homes out of adobe, mm-hmm. and some of them are still here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Almida Vicerra, for one, who's lived here a long time. Others moved to Guadalupe, mm-hmm. and an area in Glendale that's called Santa Rosa. Mm-hmm. And of course, some of them moved out of state, moved to California. As the work started going down, houses and people moving out, they started tearing down houses. Mm-hmm. And as people moved out and houses were being torn down, eventually the only house left was the house that my mom and dad lived in. Mm-hmm. And it was torn down. Gosh, I can't remember exactly, but it was in the maybe about 1963. Mm-hmm. Their house was torn down, and they built a house for them in Camp 53. Mm-hmm. And the family lived there until my father retired.
Yeah. In what year did he retire? I'm sorry.
I can't remember exactly the year that he retired, but I do know that he had worked over 40 years, mm-hmm. for it was then became Goodyear Farms, and he didn't do the irrigation supervision anymore. they sent him to work in an orchard. And he suffered from rheumas, so it was hard for him irrigating in the water. I think maybe it might have been 1973. So he decided to retire, and they bought a home here. It's now Avondale, but it used to be just county land out here on 125th or El Mirage Road.
And do you recall from the time the braceros were there in the camp, anything extraordinary or unusual that happened?
No, I think I was too busy going to school. By then I was in high school.
You were in high school?
I think so.
So you did a lot more of your socializing in high school?
Well, you know, I was kind of more of a homebody. My sister was outside. Okay, my sister was outside playing ball, my brothers and sisters playing ball. I was in the house helping my mother, reading. I loved to read. And I would start a book at study hall, had study hall at high school. I'd start a book and I'd want to finish it. So I would just be in the house after helping my mother, just doing reading or homework. I know we listened a lot to the radio, to Musica Mexicana. One of the things that happened to me when I was in about the fourth grade, and going back a little bit, we weren't allowed to speak Spanish at school. You know, that was a rule. Kids got spanked, got their rulers, hitting their hands. Anyway, we would run off during recess to an area where the teachers couldn't hear us, and we'd speak Spanish. Well, at about the fourth grade, I started thinking, well, what's going on? What's wrong with the Spanish? Why can't we speak it? Well, I knew later that was because they wanted us to learn the English. But I started listening to music, and I'd have a composition book, and I started writing down the songs. And I had a book with songs. I'd listen to a song on the record player, on the vitrola, and I'd get so many words, then I'd hear the song again, you know, until I had the complete book. And that's how I taught myself to write Spanish. I found out that it's a lot easier to read and write Spanish than it is English, you know. But in learning Spanish later on in high school, it helped me to better understand the English. So in liking this reading, liking to read, a lot of times what would happen is the kids would be outside playing, and I would climb a tamarack tree with a book, and I would read a book while they're there playing, whether it was swimming in the canals, which we used to do quite a bit. Instead of doing that, or play ball or do anything like that, I would be sitting up a tree reading a book.
So what did you end up doing after high school?
After high school, I went to college. I was When I entered kindergarten, I really was amazed at how Miss Gomez, who was our teacher, taught the kids with Sally, Dick, and Jane. And I wanted to be like her. I wanted to be a teacher. So as I grew older, I realized that college was expensive. My dad wouldn't be able to afford to send me to school. So I started taking secretarial classes. I was pretty good in typing and shorthand and all of that, you know. So I thought I would go into Phoenix, get a job, because there was a bus that would go from Litchfield to Phoenix. But I was leading a Girls League meeting one time. All the girls belonged to Girls League and all the boys to Boys Alliance. And we met every so often. So this one day I'm leading the meeting. I think the president wasn't there and our sponsor wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And Frances Ibarra, who was the Spanish teacher, after the meeting came up to me. I guess I did a good job running the meeting. And she says, "Belen, what are you going to do after you graduate?" And I said, and I told her, you know, what I had planned, you know, secretarial job. And she said, "But what do you really want to do?" I said, "I'd like to be a teacher." And she took her hand, pointed at me, and said, "You are going to go to school, and you are going to become a teacher." And I said, "But Miss Ibarra, you know, it's expansive. My parents won't let me go." And she says, "You take care of your schoolwork, and I'll take care of your parents." Well, she went out in the fields, talked to my dad, told him. My dad thought I was in trouble at first when he saw her. And I don't know exactly what she said to him, but she went back a second time. And the second time, well, my dad said, "It's too expensive, we can't afford it, where would you go?" You know, all those kinds of things. So she went back and talked to him a second time. And he said, "Well, okay, but you have to talk to Malena, my mom. Her name is Magdalena, but we called her Malena." And we were having tests, and we could leave early and go with the elementary school kids, go home at 2 instead of 4. And she asked me to stay. She says, "Don't go home. I know you're done for the day, but don't go home. You stay here and go home on the 4 o'clock bus." And I said, "Okay." Well, she went home, and she talked to my mother. She says, "My mother was making tortillas," she said. Don't know exactly what the conversation was, but when I got home at 4 o'clock, my mother was in the kitchen, and she had been crying. And so then she asked me, Billy, because they call me, ella me decía Billy, because she couldn't pronounce it in English. And she said, "¿Quieres ir al colegio? ¿De veras quieres ir?" "Sí, mamá." De veras quieres ir? Sí, mamá." Finally, I think about the third or fourth time that I said, "Sí," she gave me a hug and told me, "Tienes mi bendición." And then we were both crying. And Dr. Amabisca then, you know, followed through, decided that NAU would be, with then Arizona State College at Flagstaff, would be the best place for me to go. So I went there for 4 years. And Mr. Borg, the typing teacher and shorthand teacher, made an appointment for me to meet with Melvin T. Hutchinson, who was the director of publicity. And I had an interview with him, and he hired me, and I worked all 4 years, and I graduated in 1958, and then went and taught 1 year in Ash Fork. And then Rudy and I came home, and Rudy was working in the San Manuel mines, and he came home, and his brother went and asked for my hand in marriage, and we were married in June 28th of 1959.
You've been a teacher ever since?
Yeah, I was a teacher. Then we were going to live in San Manuel, but they had a strike. Mm-hmm. And we came home and lived here with his mom waiting for the strike to settle. And in the meantime, he got a job working for Goodyear Farms at the cattle feed pens. And I was doing substitute teaching at the school here in Avondale. And then they hired me permanently. So I taught there, taught school, sixth grade, third grade, substitute teacher, eventually became director of the migrant program, then federal programs, then assistant principal, publicity director, jack of all trades, you might say. And I retired from there in 1999.
Is there anything that you remember? We're getting close to the end of the interview. About any other experience that you might have had with Braceros, how they changed your family's life, or how you feel they changed life in the camps?
I think they did change the life in the camp, and my parents became good friends with some of them. Mm-hmm. So that changed our life. Of course, my mother, in providing meals for them, was also supplementing her income, because they would pay her for that. Mm-hmm. And my mother was always one of helping my father with supplemental income. I'm sure my sister told you about the garden that she always had. She always had a garden, raised vegetables and all that. She also raised chickens, and she raised turkeys. Mm-hmm. And she would sell turkeys for Thanksgiving, and that's how the family would come up with Christmas money. So they had more of the Braceros had more of an effect on my mom and dad, mm-hmm, than they did on me personally, because then part of the time I was away.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.